Hello and welcome back to Debt Wired, where we break down everything debt-related with expert insights. I'm Elena Halkiaw. Today, we're exploring one of the more niche but increasingly compelling corners of structured finance, esoteric ABS. Joining us today is Mike Nowakowski, Head of Structured Products at Conning, a $170 billion global asset manager with deep expertise across all structured products. From data centers to shipping containers and music royalties, we're unpacking how these deals work, why they're getting traction, and where the biggest opportunities lie in 2025. Mike, great to have you on.
Thanks.
So can you first define esoteric ABS versus traditional ABS for our listeners here?
Sure. When I think about traditional ABS, you know, I think most people think about auto loans, auto leases, credit card receivables, maybe even some student loans. And very simply put, esoteric ABS is just like a traditional ABS structure, but the underlying collateral is a little off the beaten path. Esoteric has the same senior subordinated tranche structure with credit enhancement. It's just that the collateral is a little bit less familiar. And some of the things that we look at are the things that you mentioned at the top. So data centers, timeshares, music royalties. So really, by and large, the structure is the same. It's just that the collateral might be a little bit unfamiliar to investors that traditionally look at ABS.
So from an investor standpoint, what are the advantages of esoteric ABS versus more traditional high-yield corporate bonds, for example?
One of the things that we consider as being really paramount to esoteric ABS and broadly, you know, structured credit is this idea of structural protections in the form of credit enhancement. When an issuer brings a deal to the market, you have things like over-collateralization. A collateral pool might be 100 million, but there might be 125 million of collateral. So you have 25% over collateralization. And also things like subordination. So if you are at the top of the stack in the AAA bonds, you know, there will be classes below you. And basically losses go bottom up and principal and interest goes top down. You are protected, depending on which class you're in, from future losses or delinquencies. And also, these are bankruptcy remote SPVs. Delinquency or default related collateral can be liquidated in a time of a downturn. So you can claw back some of your value once the severity is applied to the collateral. So in an example like an auto loan ABS, you know, very traditionally, if a borrower defaults on their loans, that vehicle can be sold and some of the clawback can be applied to the trust. So same situation goes for esoteric ABS. You know, if you have a timeshare loan or a data center, if a property or collateral is liquidated, then some of that cash flow goes back into the trust.
And right now, obviously, we're navigating kind of an uncertain market environment with all the recent tariff headlines. You know, we've had some market volatility. How does esoteric ABS compare to other asset classes? What kind of opportunities are you seeing right now in this market?
Yes, certainly esoteric was no stranger to the volatility that we saw following Liberation Day. And, you know, I would describe the move so far as mostly beta related. It's not really in any specific story. Although when we unpack, you know, all the different subsectors within esoteric ABS, certainly there are going to be some winners and some losers as it relates to tariffs. And clearly, you know, the first order effect would be container, which I know you mentioned at the top of the show. Container ABS derives most of its performance from global trade and as a knock on the utilization rates. So if you think back to last year, that's why the blockages at the Suez and Panama canals were actually a positive for container ABS, because utilization rates went way up because more boxes were needed. But to the extent that global trade and, you know, transoceanic shipping drops off, that would clearly pose a fundamental problem. But I think it's important for the context that, you know, heading into this, we were at like 98% utilization rates. So we're at a really good starting point. So back to your question, I think the typical esoteric ABS, the senior bonds start at single A. We're trading about 30 to 40 basis points wider since then, but most subsectors are wider than that at the triple B level. So as I mentioned, you know, it's really so far been a beta move. Containers definitely the first order effect. I think we should be wider there. But when we look at, you know, what could second order effects be from a macro perspective, I think to the extent that consumer discretionary spending gets impacted as inflation potentially comes back into the story, we could see things like timeshare, triple net lease, which is usually pretty retail heavy, aircraft leases, and obviously consumer unsecured. These are all discretionary sectors. So we could see delinquencies start to creep up in a number of these sectors. But you know, so far, thankfully, I know it's early days, but the delinquencies on these types of shelves, and these types of subsectors are not really translating yet. But I do think there's more to come here.
In terms of deal flow, are you seeing any changes there after the tariff announcements?
So there was a little bit of a pause in the primary market. I would say about 2 weeks, there was a lot of 15Gs filed. And for reference, 15Gs is basically the paperwork that needs to be filed to get a primary deal started from the syndicate desk who's bringing the deal. There was a lot of paperwork filed, but really no deals to speak of in the primary market. So I think, you know, a lot of issuers were waiting for a pause in the volatility, which ultimately we did get. There was a couple deals that were actually pulled from the market that were already pre-marketing or marketing during, you know, the first week of April that had to get shelved for a bit. But the last, I would say, week to 2 weeks have been, primary market's been wide open, and we're seeing plenty of deals come to market and a decent amount of oversubscription, which is basically what we were seeing before a liberation day. So looking back to 2024, you know, I think the average subscription rates in esoteric was like 3 to 5 times over, broadly speaking. You know, obviously that varies from class to class within the deal, but there was a heavy amount of oversubscription. And certainly this is on people's radars, and it's not like we're right back to where we were, but given the fact that spreads are a bit wider, there's a healthy amount of demand for structured credit that has the things that I spoke about earlier in terms of structural enhancements and protections to the investor. And we're seeing that come through in the subscription levels, which is good to see. The market's certainly not broken. And secondary trading has been pretty heavy too, with, you know, a lot of bonds trading hands after the fact.
And what kind of returns are you getting right now in esoteric ABS?
You know, when we're talking about returns, more in the context of what the investor base is that we cater to is more about yields, because we're longer term investors who typically hold these deals until maturity. Right now, most of the collateral in esoteric that we're seeing is somewhere between 5.5% and 7%. And I realize that's a big window. So if I break that down a little further, you know, I mentioned that single A is generally where the seniors start. And so we're seeing somewhere between 5.5% and 6% on seniors. And when you get out to triple Bs, that's closer to 6.75 to 7. But then again, check back with me in a week and in this type of market, and it could be very different. Broadly speaking, yields have been pretty stable since the Fed finished liftoff in 2023. We've really been in that sort of 5.5% to 6.5% range on yields for the last couple of years or so, despite the fact that spreads have been really one way tighter since the beginning of 2024.
I do want to touch a little bit on data centers, because there's clearly been a lot of momentum around data center ABS. Can you walk us through how these deals are structured and what makes them attractive to both issuers and investors?
Yeah, data center ABS has been a talking point that lots and lots of people have asked me about, have cared about. It's in the news. It's kind of everywhere. You can't really get away from it. So, you know, again, typical structures, just like we mentioned, it's a multi-tranched bankruptcy remote SPV. It's secured by a master trust of data center properties. And again, it has the typical cash flow where losses go bottom up and principal and interest goes top down. So the difference with data center is, you know, it's not necessarily a loan. You're backed by the physical real estate and leases for that real estate. So with a lot of hard asset ABS, there is an ARD, or anticipated repayment date, where the borrower needs to either refinance the debt on that day off, on that day, or pay it off completely. And if the debt goes beyond the ARD, then there's usually a coupon step up to the tune of somewhere between 200 and 500 basis points. And this is good from an investor perspective because it incentivizes the borrower to refinance. It also gives the investor a little bit of comfort with respect to the maturity date on the deal when it was originally issued. So if you have a 5-year ARD, but the maturity date of the deal itself is 30 years from now. As an investor, you can kind of get comfortable with the fact that if it goes beyond the ARD, you're going to get 500 basis points of extra coupon on top of what you've already getting. So when we speak about investor comfort, we also like to know that we have things like subordination and over-collateralization, again, which we mentioned at the top of the show. But I think from an issuer perspective, the ABS market provides a pretty reliable source of funding and a really big investor base who is pretty sticky. You know, a lot of the esoteric market is dominated by insurance company investors, which is not really flighty capital like, you know, say a hedge fund or a fast money manager. So pretty stable hands and again, pretty reliable funding. So definitely two things that issuers are looking for.
And when we're talking about capital from insurance companies, is that part of why the sector has been a bit more resilient to spread volatility lately?
Yeah, for sure. Insurance companies are typically buy and hold investors. There's not a lot of trading hands that happens with these deals. And when spreads are wider like they are right now, these are really attractive entry points for investors who tend to stay in deals unless there's a very material credit concern.
And I know you've said we're seeing a bit of a crossover between ABS and BSL markets when it comes to digital infrastructure specifically. Are we seeing a preference from an issuer's perspective? Because you did mention kind of what the opportunities that ABS provides for issuers. Are we seeing any shifts in that regard from one market to the other?
We're seeing data center become a little bit more active in CMBS. And it started as a very niche instrument in ABS back in 2018. And this was basically to service cloud and enterprise software clientele. But we've seen it evolve into this behemoth of a subsector where, you know, we have billion-dollar CMBS deals. And so what we're seeing in the CMBS market is very akin to a SASB, so a single asset, single borrower. And I think from an issuer perspective, I think it makes sense and it behooves the issuer to have access to all the various funding they can get given the growth of what we've seen in data centers. So you have things like warehouse lines at banks, you have private credit, you have ABS, you have CMBS, you have infrastructure CLOs, which you mentioned, but there are differences. And I suspect that you'll want to know about those differences.
Yeah, that'd be great. What kind of differences are we talking about here?
In the CMBS market, as I mentioned, they come in the form of a SASB. So the investor is really tied to one property or, you know, a couple of properties. The good benefit for issuers in the CMBS SASB space for data centers is that you can get a AAA rating at the top of the stack, which may unlock, you know, a whole different set of investors that you wouldn't be able to get in the ABS subsector. So with ABS, the rating agencies typically cap the top of the stack at single A. These are more of your insurance 144A esoteric type buyers, whereas in the CMBS format, you know, you've got some investors that might be just capped at AAA. For us and, you know, our client base, we prefer the ABS structure simply because it's a master trust format. So what that means is that properties can be added to the master trust and it's a commingled trust. So as a investor in an ABS deal, you know, we get the benefit of diversification across all these properties. We're not tied to one specific property, say in Dallas or Austin or whatever. We've got geographic and property type diversification. In addition, we get to talk to management teams, which is super helpful because we can get some good color as to what their business plans are, what kind of tenants they're seeing, you know, potentially who in terms of tenants are within some of the new data centers that they're building, what type of use case they have in terms of cloud or AI. And that's been really beneficial given the growth that we've seen in the sector.
How is the sector impacted by the tariffs? Have you seen any specific impacts already?
No, not yet. There's, you know, I know there's been some headlines around Microsoft and Amazon pulling back from leases a couple of weeks ago, maybe last month. But honestly, when we talk to some of these management teams, you know, one of the first things that we do is try to figure out if they're building on spec or not. Because in a situation where things can seem a little bit hyped, we want to make sure that no one is building inventory ahead of future demand. And right now, we don't get that sense. By and large, the management teams that we talk to have a line around the block for tenants looking for space. And I think it behooves Microsoft and others to be conscious about the space that they're leasing and how much they need. And quite frankly, some of the management teams at the data center issuers and borrowers say, look, we're okay if a handful of people walk away from contracts because we can go back to our tenant line out the door and release them at higher rates. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of buildup about how much capital is being spent, how much CapEx is going into data centers and AI. But the good news is that so far, the AI power use within data centers is pretty minimal. We've seen estimates of somewhere around 10% power usage for AI. Most of it is cloud and enterprise software. I think on your question about tariffs and the impact, you know, we'll have to see what it looks like in terms of chips. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways is, will we see tariffs on chips? Who will they come from? Where will they come from? So that's definitely the biggest question mark right now. But for sure, the AI arms race is still on, in our opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely a very uncertain time. And I know another sector that we've been following, especially is solar companies. We've recently been following different situations and companies in the space like Sunnova, for example. Do you invest in solar ABS? Is that a space you're involved in?
We had for a time. However, given the news you just described, we had seen some underperformance in solar, maybe mid-2024. We did a little digging and we found that some of the solar issuers were not modeling the initial prepayment curves as we had seen them come in. And what I mean by that is there was an assumption that your investment tax credit would go towards the principal of your loan for the solar equipment. And what we were seeing is that inflation at that time was quite high, and some borrowers were being stretched in other areas. And so when their investment tax credits came in, they were using that tax credit to pay down other debts, like credit cards, autos, et cetera. And so we saw delinquencies start to rise, defaults start to rise. And as a team, we said, all right, hands off the sector until we can see some flattening out of performance. Since then, the good news is that a lot of the solar issuers have basically revised the way they look at future issuance and say, all right, we're not going to give these deals the assumption that all of the capital coming back from the investment tax credit will go towards paying the principal of the loan. We'll give it something to the order of 0 to 50% rather than 100%. The early days on the revised deals, call it mid-2024, is coming in okay, certainly a lot better than, say, the 22 vintage, where you know you had really high coupons because interest rates were so high, but the underlying loans, the APR on the loans were very low, which was not enough to support the bonds. So a couple of dynamics there without getting too much in the weeds, which I think I already did. You had this sort of upside down economics in some of the earlier vintage deals, along with this investment tax credit assumption, which I think are being corrected, but we'll have to see how those things shake out. You know, we need to give it some time in order for that performance of the underlying borrower to come through.
So is that what you're waiting for? Is that what you need to say, okay, we might re-enter the space, or is there something else that you're waiting for?
No, I think that's a good starting point for us. Data is huge in our space. We have to pay attention to the data. It's a concern when we see a new subsector that has very little data to point to. You know, we're monitoring deals that we own every month to see, after the remittance reports come out, you know, what kind of performance have we seen month over month, year over year? Is there a seasonality to it, like around tax return time? These are the things that we're watchful for. You know, we definitely have to see some improvement in solar in order to feel some comfort with it. As you mentioned, there are some shelves and some issuers that we might be more comfortable with dipping our toes back in first if we get there. And there are those that are probably, we're going to have to see some serious stability to get some comfort going down to that level.
And looking ahead to the rest of the year, where do you see the most growth or opportunities in esoteric ABS? Any areas you think investors should be paying more attention to?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on the path of tariffs here and if we get 90 deals in 90 days or as advertised. But overall, I think last year was a benchmark year for esoteric. And I say that because we had a record year of supply in ABS overall, but we also had a record percentage of esoteric within that record supply. So what that tells me is that issuers and syndicate desks and investors alike are being innovative and creating new ways to get funding done away from the traditional, you know, investment grade, high yield private markets. And market participants are pretty keen to get new ideas in front of clients, that they've shown the ability and willingness to underwrite new and interesting ideas as long as they're reasonable. And I think music royalties is a good one to point to. You know, back in 21, 22, it was a very novel idea to securitize music royalties. And now, you know, that's turned into a $4 billion market. So if I had to point to one, you know, specific growth area, I think fiber network is going to be front and center. Obviously, with most cable companies going to fiber network now and securitizing customer contracts, but also fiber is kind of the guts of the data center too. So connectivity is really important to those operators. And I think between both residential and commercial fiber network cables, that's going to be a pretty big area for growth. And we're already seeing that so far this year.
That's great to hear. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for checking out this episode of Debt Wired. As always, you can subscribe or download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights, research, and more from our team at DebtWired.com. See you next time.